Hello to all Earth citizens and welcome to my Conscious Coaching Podcast. This is Dr. Kianush, founder and creative director of MCCG. My Conscious Coaching Group is a non-political, non-religious 501c3 coaching nonprofit with initiatives in healthcare, leadership, and education, with focus on emotional and spiritual intelligence. Our vision is to raise self and global awareness for a conscious mind through education and application of EQ and SQ, and our mission is to connect, collaborate, and partner with hospitals, academics, colleges, and medical schools and organizations to embrace growth, self-healing, and self-coaching to achieve well-being and peak performance of individuals and the team as a one connected whole. Today, we have a healing presence in our podcast as our guest speaker, my dear colleague and mentor, Dr. James Gordon. Dr. Gordon is a Harvard-educated psychiatrist and a pioneer of mind-body medicine and integrative medicine. He is the founder and CEO of the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. He is also a clinical professor at Georgetown Medical School and was chair of the White House Commission on Complementary and Alternative Medicine Policy under Presidents Clinton and G.W. Bush. He is author of many books, including Honest Dog and most recently, The Transforming Trauma, The Path to Hope and Healing. Dr. Gordon, welcome to MCCG Podcast. It is an honor to have you today.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Jim, please let us know what else do you like our listener to know about you, or how the world should know you?
Well, I don't know. I mean, people know me in all different ways because I've taken a kind of circuitous path, which winds up precisely, I suppose, where it's supposed to be. I originally began as a conventionally trained psychiatrist who was deeply interested in the experience of my patients. And I was more interested in many ways in the way they looked at and experienced the world, who they were as human beings, than I was in the diagnostic category into which they fit. That was of secondary importance. So I began, I was always interested in working with people who were the most troubled, the most hard to reach, the most, I suppose I could see this later on, the most traumatized. So I began working with people when I was in medical school with autistic children, and then as a resident with people who were schizophrenic, working with them without medication, helping to understand the world that they were living in. And then I began, when I was at National Institute of Mental Health, my work was originally with runaway and homeless children on the streets of Washington, D.C. and Prince George's County. And I was always interested, again, in the experience these kids were having. I didn't want to fit them into the diagnostic category, which was popular then, runaway reaction of adolescence. Well, that's just a description of what they did. They left their homes or they were homeless on the street. And they weren't criminals, even though running away was at that point a crime. And so I created, a first in Washington, D.C., and then nationally, a program for to help these kids, to support programs all over the country that we're working with these kids in this kind of respectful, non-stigmatizing, welcoming way. And I developed a national program for homeless and runaway youth while I was at NIMH. And then after I left NIMH, my interest was in not only in doing a private practice, I do Chinese medicine and work with nutrition. So I became very involved while at NIMH and afterwards in this growing holistic or integrative medicine community. And I was one of the early people in this community. And I managed to get information that was being developed, the best research on the most promising approaches like acupuncture and herbalism and mind-body medicine and manipulative therapies, the ones that chiropractors and osteopaths gave. I managed to get the National Institute of Mental Health interested in and supportive of doing research in these approaches. And then after I left NIMH, I wanted to continue to have an effect on not only on the individual patients I saw, but on the larger medical healthcare system, on the research we were doing and how we were thinking about medicine. And I began to explore ways to continue to expand the boundaries of the way we looked at medicine and the way we looked at people and the approaches that we included, approaches from traditional healing systems as well as high classical systems like Chinese medicine and Greek Hippocratic medicine and Ayurveda, and combining those with modern scientific medicine. And eventually I created the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, which is, kind of brings me to where I am now. That was in 1991 because I wanted to have an educational organization that could help people who were working in traditional health settings to bring this approach that I was helping to develop here in the United States and around the world, to bring it into their own practice, to their own institutions, to their own communities. So from the beginning, we've been an educational institution. And a couple of years into training people, first locally, then nationally here in the US, it occurred to me that maybe this approach, which focused on self-care and on small group support, that this approach could be helpful to people in some of the most troubled places on the planet. And that was the beginning, around 1996, I would say, in the turning in the direction of working with population-wide psychological trauma, of working with communities during wars, after wars, and climate-related disasters, bringing this approach, which includes 16 or 18 self-care techniques and small group support, bringing this approach to those communities or institutions or whole countries, for example, like Kosovo during the war in 1998, to those communities, those countries, training people there and integrating this approach of self-care and group support into the services and the world view of all those who are working with people who've been traumatized. And in a place like Kosovo, during the 1998-99 war and the bombing that happened afterwards, it was the whole population that was traumatized. So that's the work I've been doing. And that's probably for the last 25 years how people have come to know me. Oh, he's the one with the Center for Mind-Body Medicine, and their work is with population-wide psychological trauma. And we now have what may well be the largest, most effective program for addressing population-wide psychological trauma in children and adults, in combatants and civilians, in people who've lost their homes and their families, in whole communities that have been devastated in so many different ways. So that's, You asked a simple question. I gave you a kind of long answer, but I think that people know me, who met me in different parts of my life, know me for different reasons. And I think one of the interesting things perhaps is that I have grown and changed as the world has changed, and my interests have changed, and I've come to this place now that feels really quite comfortable of having a whole nonprofit, a Center for Mind-Body Medicine with 30, 35 U.S. employees and an international faculty of 150 that's ready to address population-wide trauma here in the U.S. and overseas. And I'm just about to go back pretty soon to Ukraine to begin the next phase of our work there.
Yeah, so wonderful. And wow, what a journey, Jim. What a journey. I always consider you as one of the angelic human beings living among us. And for the reason that exactly you go where the pain is, and no matter where is that around the world or here at home in United States. And I really have admired you all my life and have been watching you and being connected with your work, and has been a source of inspiration for me. So we talk about the trauma, but just for our audience, we know that the trauma has a different range. So to your opinion, how do you define the trauma? What do you call trauma in life? Trauma with little t's and the big t's. What's the difference?
Good question. Trauma is a Greek word. It means wound or injury to the body, to the mind, to the spirit. I think the first thing to understand is that all of us will have trauma in our lives.
Yeah,
trauma is a part of human life, and we need to understand it as such. It's not just something that happens to those people in wars or children who are horribly abused by their parents. All of us, sooner or later, will experience this kind, some kind of trauma. Maybe early life, if we live in a violent community, or where family doesn't have any money, or if the family is disrupted, or if there's a serious illness. But then later in life, there are also traumas in youth or midlife, loss of an important relationship is traumatic. Certainly has been for me, and I think for many people. Loss of our sense of who we are. If we were headed in a particular direction, we had a sense of ourselves as a certain kind of person, and all of a sudden that's totally disrupted by rejection or by events or by being fired from a job that we love, that's traumatic. And then as we grow older, we lose people. We lose people we love, grandparents first, perhaps, and parents. And we have to deal with our own increasing frailty as we, if we're fortunate enough to grow old, and with the inevitable loss of people we love and of our own impending death. So trauma is everywhere a part of life. And I think that what that does is if we understand that, that when we experience it, when we experience either the agitation and the fear and difficulty concentrating of trauma, I was just talking to someone today who is dealing with a cancer diagnosis, and he kind of lost track of things for a while and was kind of, and he was worried, am I having a panic attack? And I said, no, this is a defense you have. That you're just protecting yourself because the trauma that you've experienced with this diagnosis of cancer is a bit overwhelming. So you're taking a kind of time out. Your whole sort of mental and nervous system, your whole emotional being is saying, oh, I gotta leave this for a while.
Yeah, exactly. So your body tells you, your body talks to you in a different way. So the self-awareness, you know, and awareness of the body helping us to understand, you know, the signs and clues. And so it's fair enough to say that life is a series of stress and trauma rehearsal, right? And we have to be prepared for that.
Well, I think we do. And it's going to come. And also we can be prepared, but we never know when it's going to come. I mean, that's...
Exactly. So we better enjoy the moments in between. So that's what we mean.
That's right. And also one of the reasons why we use meditation as central to our treatment of trauma, many different kinds of meditation, is that it brings us into the moment so that we're in balance physiologically and psychologically in an ongoing way, which makes it easier when trauma comes to deal with that trauma and come back into balance. And also, the meditative techniques are particularly effective for helping us move through trauma. We teach them in the middle of wars. And this patient of mine who's with the cancer diagnosis, he is doing more and more slow, deep breathing every 3, 4, 5 times a day because the anxiety is coming up. So yes, exactly. We prepare ourselves primarily by doing whatever we can to move into that state of moment, relaxed moment-to-moment awareness that we call, and that has been called for millennia, meditation. That's what it's about.
Meditation is the corner arse of our work at the same time, mindfulness and meditation. And definitely, as you mentioned, the more tools and skills we have on our belt, the better we are prepared when the trauma will come. And again, going back to your population-wide trauma work, I was just curious, what was your initial, you know, inspiration that you decide to do that? I know I had a near-death experience, so I died and I had the glimpse to afterlife and I had the shift of the personality and, you know, the values after I came back. But what was your inspiration and that initial, you know, ignite for you?
It was seeing the effectiveness. We began with our work at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine. People take a look at our website, cmbm.org. We began locally training people. I've always wanted to be, and made sure we're an educational institution. Mm-hmm. And so we began training people here in the Washington, D.C. area, therapists and doctors, to use this model of self-care and mutual support with people with whom they were working in hospitals, clinics, or private practices. And it worked well. And then we decided, well, let's bring it nationally. And we, a dozen of the people who were in our first local training group of 30, we selected then, I and Mary Lee Esty, who was a psychologist and social worker I was working with at the time, we selected them to be our faculty, and we began training 120 people from all over the United States, just put out the word and people came.
Wow.
And that went well. And people, you know, brought our work back to their own communities, their own hospitals, their own clinics, their own schools. And it just came to me that it was time to see if we could do more. And then someone, this will be interesting to you, a woman I know who was actually a kind of psychic and psychic counselor, he said, Jim, would you like to come to Bosnia? And this was just after the peace accords were signed in Bosnia in 1996. And I said, no, I don't know that we could go there. I don't know what we can do. The people have been fighting with each other for hundreds of years, and I don't speak the language, yada, yada, yada. And then it came right into my mind, but I do want to go to Mozambique and South Africa. Or I do want to go to Mozambique. That was the first thought. Because I want to see if our approach can work with some of the people who've been most brutalized and who have done the most terrible things in the world. And that's former child soldiers. So my colleague, Susan Lord, and I, she's a family physician, we made arrangements to go to Mozambique. And our friend in Mozambique said, well, if you're coming here, you definitely have to go to South Africa and meet with the people who've been affected by apartheid. So we went. And we saw that these kids from Mozambique, who certainly didn't speak English and they had very little education, many of them had killed their family members, they'd been tortured and drugged and they burned villages, that they could use our techniques effectively. And so could people in South Africa who'd lost family members during apartheid. And I got back to the United States and I called my friend Laura up and I said, okay, let's go to Bosnia.
Wow.
Let's see if we can do this on a large scale. And that's really how it began. And it began because I saw that what we were doing was working, and it was working, and that many people, it wasn't up to me or Mary Lee or Susan to do the work. We could train people to do this work, including, we soon discovered, non-professionals, non-health professionals, non-mental health professionals, but who were committed to helping other people. So we began and started in Bosnia. And then the second lesson, or not second, but another lesson was, waiting till after the war is not ideal. Patterns of trauma that are caused during a war or during some other terrible event that are not addressed soon become fixed patterns that are harder to get out of. And we saw that in Bosnia. So when the war in Kosovo began, I said, and Susan agreed with me, let's go to Kosovo. Let's work during the war. Let's work with the people who are being bombed and burned out of their homes. Let's work with the people, the doctors, the nurses, and also the military from the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe who are trying to help those people. So one thing led to another. Eventually, the work that we do, the work of self-care and mutual support, became one of the two pillars of the entire community mental health system in Kosovo. And that began in the work there began in 1998 during the height of the war. And those programs are still going now 25 years later. And we train 600 people in Kosovo. And we have a leadership team in Kosovo. And some of those people not only work in Kosovo, but they work with us and other projects around the world. So that is kind of one step after another. And it was really sort of, in my mind, I became a doctor to be useful, to help other people and to be there in times of crisis. And this seemed like this population-wide work seemed justified by our experience in training people here in the United States. And also it seemed the next step. Let's bring this out. Let's not just keep this in the consulting room one-on-one. Let's make it possible for people all over the world to use what we have to offer.
Yeah, exactly, all over the world. And this is a great example, you know, that how universe is helping someone that is really intending in his heart to make a difference, and how your path has been unfolding in front of you, starting with the smallest steps and coming to you in a magic way. I just want to put it that way, in a magical way. So you definitely are a global angel. So I just call it that way. And talking about your work around the world, so you have a program also with Ukraine and recently with Iran. What are those programs look like?
Well, the program in Ukraine, this is another instance. It's clear to me as soon as the war began, Russia invaded Ukraine in February, that this was a time for us to go there. I'd been thinking of going to Ukraine for a few years because of the fighting that was ongoing in the eastern part since 2014. But there wasn't a way to easily fit in. Once this Russian invasion happened, I knew that I'd have to find that way, whether it was easy or hard. So I just I put out feelers to friends. Who do you know in Ukraine? Who can help us get a program going in the ground, on the ground, like the program we have in Kosovo? We have a similar one in Gaza, even bigger. Gaza's our biggest one. We have one in Israel. We have one in Haiti after the earthquake there. And one thing led to another, again, step by step. And I only had one person to whom I was introduced in Ukraine. And it was a doctor named Roman Ketcher. And I knew nothing except his name and that he was in the city of Lviv.
Wow.
So I managed to get across the border, which was a long process. Getting in and out is one of the more difficult aspects of developing a program in Ukraine. But I got in. And I met with Dr. Ketcher, and he had a translator with him. And it turned out he was exactly the right person for me to meet with. He was a very prominent psychiatrist and psychoanalyst who headed up several psychiatric, psychotherapeutic, and psychoanalytic organizations. And he knew just about everybody in the field in Ukraine. And he and I really got along. I mean, I arrived, and 10 minutes later, there was an air raid siren in Lviv. So we had to go down to the basement of the hotel where I was staying. And we started talking. And he said, you know, after a while, he said, yes. He said, I'm a psychoanalyst. I'm a psychiatrist. I know a lot about those fields. I know a lot about diagnosing and treating. But I know nothing about working with population-wide trauma. What you're saying makes sense. Let's work together. And that's how it started. And he began introducing me to people, first in Lviv, then in Kyiv, where I went on my next visit, and then all over the country. And so we began laying the groundwork for the possibility of working on a very large scale in Ukraine. And I wrote about this. There's an article of mine that was in USA Today about how the kids were suffering in Ukraine, and CNN filmed some of my work, and NPR had me on. And so the word started getting out, and U.S. Embassy was extremely helpful in introducing me to people. And I met some people who looks like are becoming our partners and our funders on a significant scale. And we're hoping to find out about that in the next couple of days. But we're going to go back and train hundreds of, initially maybe a couple hundred, Ukrainian psychologists, psychotherapists, doctors, people who are serving their communities in perhaps eight different regions of Ukraine. And that will be a very significant program and will be the kind of nucleus of what we hope will be an even far larger program, because the whole country is deeply traumatized. I mean, you see it most in the perhaps in veterans who have perhaps lost limbs or have seen their buddies blown up and have been in combat for months. But you also see it in people fleeing the East, people whose homes have been destroyed. They've lost family members, maybe the girls or women, or sometimes the men as well, have been raped as well as brutalized by the Russian troops. So, and the whole country, it's not just the people who've been directly affected. The whole country is affected because the invasion is an assault on all of Ukraine and on the very identity of being a Ukrainian. Putin says it's not a country. He treats them as if they're not people. And so they're really fighting for their lives. And the approach that we have is one that has been welcomed everywhere that I've been in Ukraine and with just about every group I've met with. And I've met with, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 different groups, as well as individuals who are prominent in various organizations. So we're moving ahead. We did an online training, a brief training of 270 people about 6 months ago, 8 months ago. Those people are beginning to use our work. We have 800 people on that waiting list for that emergency training.
Wow.
And then we have a very large number who also want the complete training that we have to offer.
Unbelievable, Jim. Unbelievable. I'm still, you know, in an awe and surprise with all the traveling. And where do you get all this energy, you know, unstoppable, you know, just motivation. And that's why I mentioned that you cover the whole world under your wings. And it's such an inspiration for me personally, and I think for the world. And I'm so glad you are here that we can share your stories with our listener and our community and all Earth citizens, as I mentioned before. And on top of all of these, you do writing and you have written many books. The first one that I read was Unstuck. That was a seven-stage journey out of the depression. That was the first time, maybe two decades ago, that I heard that there are other modality than medication for depression. Such a beautiful work. And your most recent one that I have your signature on it and it's right beside me is The Transforming Trauma, The Path to Hope and Healing. That gives a comprehensive program that clinicians and others can use it for themselves and then share with others or whom they are serving. Can you tell us a little bit about your book and what readers can learn from it?
Sure. Well, I wrote the book. I was talking with an agent and we were talking about what book after Unstuck that you mentioned, book on depression, what was I going to write next? And he looked at me and he said, well, what do you do all the time? And he knew. And I said, yeah, I work with trauma. I teach people how to deal with trauma. He said, well, that sounds like what you ought to be writing about.
Yeah.
So what I've done in Transforming Trauma is I've provided a whole program that people can use for themselves. They can use I teach probably 20, 25 different self-care techniques. It's a program that people do not need a therapist for. It's wonderful if you have a therapist who can work with you and use these techniques and use other forms of therapy that may be effective for trauma. But I've written the book so it's both a standalone, so anybody can use it on their own. And many, many people have, and they've told me it's very easy to use. Or it's a book that clinicians hand out to their patients, whether it's individuals or groups, or that teachers hand out to students, because the approaches that I'm teaching are meant to be integrated into our daily lives and the daily lives of kids in school. We've been working in a number of school districts here in the United States, teaching these techniques and using Transforming Trauma as a text. And I begin with saying in the book, it is possible to move through and beyond your trauma, no matter how bad it is. And I've seen that. I've seen that in people who've had the most horrendous childhood, people who have in turn over time become skilled at using their own experience to help others. So I, right up front in the book, I say this is possible. And then I begin to teach techniques that give the reader a firsthand experience of what it is to be able to reduce stress, to be calm, to have that relaxed moment-to-moment awareness that we call mindfulness. So I teach a slow, deep breathing technique, which balances the fight or flight response, which continues for long periods of time in many people who've been traumatized. And then I teach them how to use drawings to look inside and look at aspects of their thinking and aspects of their emotions that may not be easily available, but will come out in drawings. And then I get people up into their bodies, because if you're traumatized, you really have to understand that the trauma, and I think you mentioned this early, Ganoush, that mm-hmm. the trauma affects the body. And one of the ways to unwind that trauma, to free ourselves from it, is to use the body, to use the, and this is the phrase, expressive meditations. That's fast, deep breathing, physical meditations, or shaking and dancing, or whirling, or jumping up and down. These are the techniques that humans have used for tens of thousands of years. And these are the techniques that are specifically effective for helping people who have been shut down, who've experienced that freeze response. So they're shut down physically and withdrawn and numb emotionally. This brings them back to life. And then I teach a whole bunch of other techniques in the book, how spending time in nature, using guided mental imagery, understanding how the structure of our family, which may have frustrated us, can also support us looking for people in our community who can be helpful, learning how to eat in a way which reduces trauma on a biological level. It's a whole chapter called the Trauma Healing Diet. And then I help people put together all of the different techniques in programs that are specifically designed for them. So the book is a how-to book. It also has much of the most important research on trauma and on how these techniques work to heal trauma, and also has what I think are interesting stories that illustrate the points that I'm making. And it's, I think, a very engaging book that people read and they read again, and they keep as a guidebook that they use, you know, pretty much every day to help them move through stressful experiences and deal with whatever trauma they've experienced. And I want to make this point that it's not a matter of comparing who's got more trauma or less trauma. We all have some trauma, and the point is we need to deal with our own trauma, with our own ongoing stress, with the stress that may arrive in our lives. That's our first job. And as we learn to do that from transforming trauma, perhaps, we also discover that we can share some or much of what we've learned, what has come to us, the understanding, the insight, the discoveries, the challenges, and the solutions to those challenges. We can, if we want, share that with other people in a way that can be helpful to them.
Yeah, I love that. So that's part of our healing journey too. So helping others, helping to help us at the same time. And I love your work that you put the agency and the autonomy on the whole person. So they own their trauma and they make themselves capable of helping themselves. And that's why our coaching also mission and vision is self-coaching and self-healing. And that's one of the reasons I'm in love with you, Jim, that just the work and your books and your writings, how much is focus on that part of self-healing and indirectly self-coaching. And yeah, as our listener knows, part of our work also is physical intelligence, which part of it is the nutrition and lifestyle. As you mentioned, that how important is the way we eat and how we treat our body to our healing process. And talking about self-coaching and self-healing, I just want to mention, you think that the trauma-informed coaching can be helpful practice also for the coaches in our society and also the healthcare system. And do you suggest that for the coaching community to follow that?
Absolutely. The coaching community has been extremely receptive. We trained about 200 health coaches, whole health coaches in the mm-hmm. Vision 8, the largest division of the Veterans Administration, and they are using our work and completely integrating what they've experienced and learned from us in the work that they're doing with very seriously traumatized and injured war veterans, as well as veterans who have chronic illnesses and veterans who are anxious and depressed. So they've done a wonderful job, and I think coaching is a beautiful profession for doing this work. Also, just working with them. Recently, I did a workshop with functional medicine coaches mm-hmm. who are integrating this our approach into their work. And working the other day, some of them, who are about 30 of them, who were in Turkey, were on a workshop that I did. And they're dealing there, of course, with the aftermath of the earthquakes they've experienced. And whole health coaches have this wonderful this wonderful sort of desire to serve, and there's a kind of freedom in coaching and a respect for the individual's capacity to help themselves that fits so nicely with the model that we teach at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the coaches, the difference between the coaches and therapy is just the therapist mostly focus on the past, while the coaching then just they hold the client's hands and they move toward the future just independently without focusing too much, you know, on the past, while considering that trauma-informed coaching is very helpful for the coaching community when they get into the client session and meetings to consider all the tools that can be helpful to them. Especially, I mean, in my field of work, working with the healthcare professionals, and as you know, the pandemic and COVID was just such a traumatic, you know, and unexpected duration of the time for all healthcare professionals. And I considered myself as a trauma. So just, I don't know, was it a little T or the big T, but for me it was kind of the trauma, and I had to use all the skills and tools that I had to deal with it, not only for myself but also for the clients, you know, and the people that I was working with it. And being that said, getting close to the end of our time, I just want to ask you, let us know for our listeners if they have any resources available, which I know you do on your website, and any upcoming training that they can participate, and how they can learn and know more about you and your work.
Yeah, so thank you for bringing that up. We welcome health coaches at our comprehensive trainings. And we have another round of trainings beginning online in September. And people should look at the Center for Mind-Body Medicine website, cmbm.org, charliemarybettymary.org. And you'll see the dates for our September training and join that training. You're most welcome. We also have resources on the website. You can see me demonstrating some of the techniques that I teach in transforming trauma. We have videos of that. There's a lot of coverage of our program so people can see what we're doing, may want to look particularly at the work that we're doing in Vision 8, but also we're working in communities of every kind all over the United States, from urban communities to poor rural communities. We work with almost every imaginable ethnic group. We have a major program with indigenous people in many parts of the United States. So this is an approach that is available, that makes use of many traditions, that is grounded in many traditions. We've learned from indigenous healers, from high classical healers of Chinese medicine and Ayurveda, and of course from modern Western psychology, Western psychotherapy, and Western science. So we put it all together, and come look at our website. You can look at the research. You can look at the techniques. Please read the best introduction, probably is reading Transforming Trauma, The Path to Hope and Healing, and come be part of. When I started the Center for Mind-Body Medicine in 1991, I wanted, in addition to bringing these self-care and mutual support techniques into the center of all healthcare, I was wanting to create a healing community and a community of healers. And so this is an invitation to join our community in whatever way might make sense to you. So take a look at our website. Get on our mailing list, use the tools and techniques that are available, read Transforming Trauma, come to our trainings, and just see who we are, and see if what we have to offer can be a part of your life, because it has to become a part of your life first, and then see if it's something you want to share with others in your coaching practice, or if they're a therapist. We have therapists, we have doctors, we have coaches, we have people who are none of those. We train school teachers and police and firefighters and youth, teenage peer counselors who are working with other young people, for example, in Parkland, Florida, after the shootings there. So it's a kind of, it's an approach that's really very open, very inviting. And I'm so glad you have me here on this podcast so I can invite your listeners as well.
Thank you so much, Jim. I look forward to our collaboration for your upcoming program for Iran, as well as a coaching nonprofit. And I love you for the reason that you haven't spared anyone that is in pain and is in trouble in any way. Thank you so much for your invitation and for being here and your healing presence and your angelic world around the world. And have a happy, healthy, healing spring, everyone.
Thank you.
Goodbye to our listeners, and remember, one podcast at a time. Thank you for being with us for another one. You can visit our website at myconscious.org to learn more about us, or write to us at coach@myconscious.org. And please stay connected by following us on our social media platforms, LinkedIn, Instagram, Facebook, or Twitter, not to miss our upcoming episodes and events. Love and light from all of us to you. Make it a great day, everyone.